a new strategy to tackle the abuse crisis. This week's piece goes over recent developments in the Catholic Church's handling of the clergy sexual abuse crisis, focusing on Belgium, Peru, Germany, Spain, Argentina, and the Dominican Republic. It explores whether Leo XIV is signaling a new approach to tackling abuse, especially in light of meetings with survivors, canonical investigations, and the appointment of church officials to oversee controversial cases, highlighting both progress and persistent challenges in his pontificate. Early in the month, Pope Leo XIV met with Belgian survivors of clergy sexual abuse, continuing a dialogue initiated by his predecessor, Pope Francis, who visited Belgium back in September 2024. The meeting was private, so there is no official record of it, raising questions about transparency. Survivors, nonetheless, appreciated the encounter as it addresses long-standing claims of widespread abuse documented first by the 2010 Adrianses Commission report. That report found at least 476 cases of abuse and revealed systematic underreporting and concealment of cases. Estimates based on the French Sauveur report suggest between 8,437 and a total of 21,262 victims in Belgium alone. It should not surprise that when Pope Francis visited Belgium, Prime Minister there, Alexander De Croo, publicly demanded the church to address abuse. It is unclear what will be the outcomes of Leo XIV's meeting with the survivors, but the fact that it happened shows some interest in addressing the issues. November also brought news about Leo XIV's appointment of Javier Augusto del Río Alba, the Archbishop of Arequipa, Peru, as the adjunct commissary to oversee the suppression of the Sodalition of Christian Life, an order that we have been talking about in the Los Angeles Press series. You can use our search engine to find the many installments of the series that we have devoted to this entity, the so-called Sodalicium, which is some sort of an order, but not really. It doesn't fit all the criteria, since there are members that do not fall in the usual categories for orders, for more established orders. In any case, the appointment has been met with skepticism. Survivors and observers question the effectiveness and impartiality of the appointment, given Archbishop Del Rio's record of minimizing abuse and maintaining close ties with members of this order, who, enticed by bishops and priests also associated to this order, have been willing to go as far as to, on the one hand, try to discredit survivors, and on the other hand, they went as to attack, they went all the way to attack Pope Francis himself in their really twisted way, to pretend that they are protecting both their order and the Catholic Church as an institution. In any case, Del Rio's appointment, whose Vicar General is precisely a member of the Sodalicium, Hence, the many doubts about this appointment raises concerns about the potential for continued cover-ups and resistance to reform. Survivors and critics argue that Del Rio's approach, downplaying abuse and urging victims to remain quiet, reflects the church reluctance to really to actually confront the crisis. And sticking with Peru, it is impossible to forget that there is no official news yet, more than a month later, about Pope Leo XIV's meeting with Juan Luis Cipriani, the Emeritus Archbishop of Lima and a key figure in Opus Dei, whose role in abuse investigations in Peru remains unclear, on top of his own the allegation that exists and that Pope Francis estimated credible that exists about abusing at least one underage male. The silence surrounding the meeting mixes with doubts about the future of the restrictions set by Pope Francis on Cipriani and the very future of the reform in that in the order, in the Opus Dei, highlighting the opacity of church decision-making processes. Over 2025, three German dioceses, that of Trier, Augsburg, and Würzburg, have published reports detailing the scale and nature of clergy sexual abuse within their territories. These reports are part of a broader effort to compensate for the failure of the German bishops to publish a comprehensive national report back in 2013. Which eventually resulted in a report, not as comprehensive as it was the original expectation, endorsed only by the universities of Mannheim, Heidelberg, and Gießen. The reports published this year reveal historical patterns of victimization and institutional self-protection, including the geographic solution, that is to transfer accused priests from one diocese or one country to another diocese, or in some cases, some other countries. If you search in our search engine at Los Angeles Press with this idea of geographic solution, you will find several cases where we have proved how this pattern exists pretty much anywhere in the world. No? In any case, the introduction of the 2002 guidelines by the German Bishops' Conference marked a turning point on this issue, setting for the first time formal procedures for investigation to provide aid to victims, and for mandatory reporting to the civil authorities. Subsequent papal documents, such as Vos Estis Lux Mundi, that is to say, you are the light of the world, published by Pope Francis, have further systematized accountability. So they are in the right track, but I'm not so sure how far they will go. For the data that we have, some of it, you can find it in the piece. But if you want the whole data, and there is plenty of data there, you can find them in each of the diocese reports. The piece has the links to all the websites and a summary of all the data one finds there. Sadly, all the reports are available only in German. The reports underscore the long-term impact of cover-ups and the challenges of legal prosecution of these kind of cases. They also highlight the need for victim advisory boards in each diocese and for clear procedures for handling abuse cases. November also brought news from Cádiz, a city in southern Spain, as Rafael Sornosa Boy became the first sitting bishop to face a canonical inquiry for alleged sexual abuse of a seminarian while he was the headmaster of the seminary of a diocese near the capital of Madrid back in the 1990s. Sornosa Boy, already 76, is an anomaly, both as the first prelate, the first at least Spaniard prelate, publicly accused and investigated while in office, and as one of the few bishops worldwide still serving past the typical retirement age of 75. However, the fact that he's already that old and the fact that the case has prescribed in both the civil and the canonical paths makes it a safe risk to potentially send a message to the bishops in Spain. That is all, the only explanation I'm able to find to the decision to keep Sornosa Boy as bishop up until now, while approving at the same time a canonical probe. Frequently, in these kind of cases, the bishop goes quietly. There is some semblance of an internal probe in some cases, but that will be it. And not in this case, at least not up until now, as Rome kept him in office, while probably the investigation was already on its way. His tenure has been marked by financial controversies and criticism from local priests and lay persons who have faced retaliation for speaking out against Sornosa Boy. The Spanish Conference of Bishops and the Archbishop of Madrid have both acknowledged the credibility of the accusations, signaling a potential shift in the church approach towards these kind of issues. However, and I must stress this, local media and church sympathizers in social media have defended Sornosa Boy. They are going to war for him. So that illustrates a relevant aspect of the crisis, in my opinion, because it is frequently lay persons themselves who are the most fervent defenders of bishops such as Sornosa Boy when they are accused of abuse or other crimes in their diocese. In any case, the canonical probe is significant for its precedent and its timing, as it coincides with the government-led negotiations in Spain to create a compensation fund for survivors in that country. That is why perhaps Sornosa is a warning from Rome, a relatively safe warning from Rome to the Conference of Bishops in Spain about the need to address the issue now. This week's piece also contrasts the swift laicization of Argentine priest Rodrigo Enrique Vázquez, expelled from the clerical state after criticizing church leaders, with the continued priesthood of convicted praetors such as Julio César Grassi, who remains a priest, despite the fact that there is a sentence that he has been in jail and that he has actually even gone as far as to ask for an early release from prison. No, comparatively, no, Vasquez's punishment was fast, was really, really swift and speedy. It took less than 2 years to laicize this priest, and believe me, nobody is going to miss Vasquez as a priest there, because he has other issues. There are some weapons there, and he is in a relationship with a female in his former diocese. But still, it is astonishing how fast this laicization came when dealing with Vasquez, and the many years and the many requests for punishing in a similar manner Julio César Grassi that have never been even acknowledged by the bishops down in Argentina. So this disparity highlights the church's use of laicization as a tool for hierarchical control, prioritizing the protection of their leaders over genuine accountability regarding abuse. The case raises broader questions about consistency, transparency, and the prioritization of institutional interests over justice for victims. And finally, the Dominican Republic also experienced its own controversy with Archbishop Francisco Osoria Acosta, the still current Archbishop of Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic, anger over the appointment of Carlos Tomás Morel Diplán as the coadjutor Archbishop there. He's angry, Osoria Acosta is angry, because Rome decided, as it happens when a coadjutor archbishop is appointed, because Rome transferred all the administrative authority to the newcomer. No? So the appointment was initially welcomed, but now it is a source of conflict. Drawing parallels to past scandals involving the former nuncio to the Dominican Republic, Polish Cardinal Joseph Wesolowski, who died after being laicized and while being on trial for the abuse of underage males in the Dominican Republic. And this is not on me. I knew about this because I was surprised at reading the front page of Listín Diario, the most relevant newspaper in the Dominican Republic, going over this case. It was their main story that day, and they, as much as El Caribe, which is a more light-hearted kind of tabloid newspaper, both newspapers, the two of them, stresses the similarities with Wesolowski's case. No, so I don't know at this point if there is a reason why this is happening, if there is a reason why apparently Osoria Acosta was not aware of what were the consequences of him going to Rome to request a coadjutor who comes back, stripping him of his powers, no? So in the pieces published in Dominican media, Osoria Acosta was complaining about the fact that he only was able to keep the titles. And yes, that is what happens when a coadjutor bishop or archbishop is appointed in any given diocese, no? So my guess is that something is happening there in the Dominican Republic. It wouldn't be the first time something happens there as far as the clergy sexual abuse crisis, and who knows what, how or when this will end. Taken together, the piece, the cases considered in this week's piece, find similar patterns reflecting tensions within the church regarding the exercise of authority, how they try to achieve or they try to avoid transparency, and the very handling of abuse, while underscoring the challenges that reform faces when institutional resistance remains strong within the church itself. While Pope Leo's actions, as summarized by the piece, signal a willingness to address some of the aspects of the clergy sexual abuse crisis, significant doubts remain. Survivors and observers question the effectiveness of his measures, the pertinence of appointed officials, you know, such as Del Rio in Peru, and the consistency of the response across regions. The persistence of institutional self-protection, delayed reporting to civil authorities, and resistance to transparency underscores the challenges facing the Catholic Church nowadays. The swift punishment of dissenters, as in the case of Argentina, contrasted with the continued protection of convicted abusers, highlights ongoing and very troubling double standards in how the church handles this. Well, thank you very much. I'm happy you are still reading us. Hopefully, we will be able to keep this effort going. You know where you can find me, either over Twitter or Blue Sky or Facebook. You can find me as Rodolfo Soriano Núñez. You can also get my email at the page Los Angeles Press has with all the pieces I have been publishing here. So I hope to see you soon. Thank you very much.